Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 21st of November, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, on Radio Aryan. And I've got a special guest with me today. We have the return of Jez Turner from the London Forum. Jez, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I had a good time in Prague catching up with Matthew Heimbach and Florian Geyer, and we made a couple of podcasts. We played one yesterday, and there'll be another one tomorrow. And he sends greetings to you, Jez. He thinks a lot of you after we went out there last year. But there's something I think we ought to talk about today, somebody who doesn't appear to think that much of you, which I find a little bit shocking, since you are one of the hardest working nationalists we have in Britain, if not the hardest working nationalist. Nick Griffin has written an expose of the alt-right. And some of it's pretty good. He's pointing out the homosexual inclinations of a lot of the alt-light, people like Milo and the Proud Boys. And these are things that we have pointed out ourselves before. But then he casts these aspersions about people who I know as hard-working British nationalists, people like Peter Rushton, who's a long-time nationalist who gets invited on RT, Press TV, does loads of work exposing the lies about World War II and exposing Zionist terrorists, British Heroes campaign he runs. He does so much work, good work, Peter Rushton does. And he accuses him of being homosexual. He accuses Max Musson from Western Spring. He uses Max's real name, which Max doesn't really like to do online. And he accuses him of having a non-white immigrant wife. And he makes all these aspersions about you as well, which I know are untrue, Jez. I mean, you know, I trust you. I went to Prague with you last year, you know. I can say to the listeners now, Jez is a trustworthy person. He's not an agent. He's genuine. But I thought maybe we could start by giving you a chance to respond to some of these accusations that have been made by Nick Griffin.
Yes, it's quite a shock, really. When something happens, it's a complete and utter shock to you. You're a bit stunned, really. It's like a burglar in your house. You suddenly think, oh, what's going on here? There's a famous English play called The Spanish Tragedy by Thomas Kidd. And in these tragedies, there's always a villain in them. And there's a scene where the Portuguese army gets defeated. And the setting is in the Portuguese court, and the viceroy of basically the king of Portugal is asking what happened at the battle. And there's a chap called Alexandria who says, well, sire, we attacked and didn't go well. You know, the enemy were greater numbers and they overcame us, really. And then this chap called Villupo speaks up and says, sorry, I must say something. It's this Alexandro who, when we were attacking, we were winning, he shot your son in the back and your son fell in front of the enemy, and that's what turned the battle. And Alexandro is just shocked by it. He can't even speak. He's just like, what? And the king takes this sort of shock as being, oh, you know, obviously he's guilty, and cuts him off to the dungeons. And then Villupo says, thus have I, with an envious forged tale, deceived the king, betrayed mine enemy, and hope for guerdon of my villainy, hope for reward of my villainy. And it's like that, really. You think, what the hell? Is the guy, is Nick Griffin drunk? Is he being tricked into this? Or is he dying of cancer or something? Or is he tired of life? And it's basically, when you look at it, you step back and you think, well, what is it all about? And it's basically attacking anyone who is not on Team Griffin, which means anyone who's not Jackson Gupta, Jackson, as he's known, or Carl Mason. And if you look on Facebook, we've been discussing this, and basically Nick Griffin's involved with something called the New Knights Templar. And we had a dinner in London recently after a traditional Britain group meeting, and it's all about getting money from rich Christians. Jim Dowson's involved with this. And Nick Griffin is reinventing himself as a Christian, as a Knight Templar, you know, defending Europe. And if you look at Griffin's career, he's always followed the money. He's changed his ideology over the years. He did a similar thing, similar expose, so-called expose, when the National Front fell apart. He was in the official National Front section, which was a bit bizarre, sort of third positionist, pro-Gaddafi, pro-Tyler Khomeini, pro-Louis Farrakhan. And it was a bit strange, and they used left-wing language to try and push this sort of radical movement that was a bit unusual, shall we say. And he blamed the Flag National Front. He blamed Andrew Bronze, Martin Wingfield, Ian Anderson, Steve Burley, Tom Acton, and all these people for destroying the National Front because they wanted Union Jacks and traditional British nationalism rather than this weird stuff. So he did that then and then disappeared for 10, 15 years and then came back and everyone thought, well, he's learned a lesson now, he's okay. But Valerie Tyndall, John Tyndall's wife, said, no, don't trust him, John. Don't trust him. And John said, no, like we men do, we sort of rational creatures, aren't we? And we say, no, he's learned his lesson, he'll be good now, you know. But obviously, he's one of these people, I think, who his ideology just basically revolves around himself. It's basically what's good for Nick Griffin is good. And he wants to make himself good vis-a-vis everyone else, better vis-a-vis everyone else. And that means doing down everyone else, criticizing them for no reason, making things. But there's so many lies in this thing. It's just, you don't know where to start, really. And it's just, my gosh, you know, I just wish we could still duel, you know, and challenge him to a duel. I mean, and he'll say, I'll take him to court and, you know, libel and slander and all this sort of thing. But I'm busy with my own court case at the moment. Money and stuff. And it's like, what the heck? And I mean, he might be having the money anyway. He's probably hidden his money away, you know, because he was made bankrupt a while ago. So it's just a bit, if he wants to go into boxing, I'm up for that. He's a Cambridge Blue. I boxed for Islington Boys Club for a while, so let's do it. But, there's so many damn lies. It's just crazy. I mean, you know.
What I don't understand is why do it? You know, because it's not just you; he's attacked. As I was saying, it's also Max Musson, it's also Peter Rushton. He's he's put down Matthew Heimbach.
I think he said it, isn't it, in Italy recently? He said, "Look, I'm going to return to Britain and start again, but I've got to leave it a few years. I've got to leave it 10 years, so everyone's forgotten my mistakes or forgotten the controversy, and or everyone's died off who." Numbers and I can start again like I did last time. And I think he's positioning himself to come back and, you know, who knows? But I mean, nobody trusts him, nobody likes him. I mean, this is the point. If you're in an organization or anything, whatever it is, whether it's the stamp club, the chess, whatever it is, whatever your hobby, over time, people will get to know you. And they'll get to know you're a decent, honorable person with integrity, and they'll begin to trust you. And you'll get more and more friends, you'll get more and more loyal followers who will be willing to work hard for you. And this is what John Tyndall had. People knock John Tyndall, but they never knock his integrity. They never knock his honesty. They never knock his bravery. They never knock his ideology. They may say he was a bit not hardworking enough or lackluster or whatever, but you can't criticize him on the key issues. With Griffin, though, it's very hard to find anybody who's been in nationalism a long time who still likes him. Now, I did a lot of work for the BNP. I did a lot of hard work for Nick Griffin, Incorporated, the BNP. And he shook my hand several times. I drove the tree truck around London. I took holidays off work and went to leaflet in East London with Bob Bailey and all these people for weeks on end. And, I'm thinking, my gosh, a stab in the back sort of thing. But then again, I wasn't doing it for Griffin. I was doing it, not even for the BNP. I was doing it for nationalism. I was doing it for the cause, you know. So the hard work isn't wasted. But you do feel very sort of, my gosh, these people, you know, it's this personality type, really. It's the sort of win at any cost, destroy your enemies, destroy your rivals. And this is what led to NG's downfall because he... didn't like any rivals, nobody, you know, at all. He had to be the one person who was popular and with power, and anybody else was popular and with power was nudged out. He promoted people who weren't really any good for that reason. And that led to his downfall, really. But yeah, I mean, what are the allegations? I forget now, but they say I'm gay, for God's sake. I mean, if any person knows me, you can call me many things. But gay is not one of them, you know?
It is, but it's so bizarre. I just think it's bizarre, Jez, because, you know, okay, if he has some kind of disagreement with the people that he's, you know, slandering, really, in this article, well, you know, why put that into an article? Because this is the first time I've heard you speak publicly about and be anti about Nick Griffin. I mean, I don't hear you speak publicly about being anti about anybody involved in nationalism. You know, we may not all agree on the ideology, but try not to knock people. But here he is publicly making this PDF where he basically attacks really good ethno-nationalists in Britain. And that doesn't make sense to me if he's loyal to the cause. And I haven't got a dog in this fight. I mean, I was never in the BNP. I think he's given some good speeches in his time, but I've also heard him make promises in these speeches which are absolutely ludicrous, that could never be kept, which seemed very strange to me. And since the BNP's fallen apart, I just thought, how did that happen? And if he wanted to come back and reinvent himself, do these Knights Templar thing, great, good on him. But why attack other people and try to make a name for yourself by doing that? Because it seems he's mixed up genuine criticism of the homosexual promoting side of the alt-right in America, and then tried to project that onto the people that have kept the torch fired up and lit for nationalism in Britain since the fall of the BNP. You know, really, he should be thanking the people that have kept it going, thanking you for getting the forum going and getting these meetings going where nationalists can meet up, because the London Forum is the only active face of nationalism in Britain at the moment. And yet here he is trying to sabotage it. And that's not, you know, that's not good for the British people. That's not good for nationalism. And I don't think it's very good for Nick Griffin either, because I don't think this is going to make him look very good. And the Knights Templar thing, I find that very strange. I noticed that he was calling his actual PDF, it says Roslyn Publishing. Roslyn is the Freemasonic centre of Britain. It's Roslyn Chapel in Scotland, which was built by the Templars, and it's holy to the Freemasons. And it has all this Freemason symbology in it, which I find a little bit strange, to be supporting the Templars and Freemasons.
That church is linked to the Templars. The family that built the chapel was Templars. But you see, Griffin's father is a 33 degree Mason. So there is this side to the Masons. They've always had one of the higher degrees. They do dress up in Knights Templar costumes. If you go down Great Queen Street to the headquarters of the Freemasons in London, in fact, headquarters of the Freemasons in the whole world, go to their huge temple there. And you see little shops opposite selling Freemasonic regalia, and you get little statues of Freemasons and little statues of these Knights Templar. So it's something to do with that. Who knows? I mean, I have defended Nick Griffin in the past. I said, well, you know, he did some good speeches in the European Parliament. He went to Syria. He did a few good things there. Da 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 da. And now he's criticizing, you know, saying these young nationalists like Jack Renshaw and people there, they're doing it all wrong. They've been, you know, they've gone astray. Well, if they are, which he says, you know, they're little lost boys who've gone astray. Well, whose fault is that? It's the leadership of people like him who've just flunked off and left these young people floundering. Now, he can't criticize these young nationalists for getting arrested, getting into trouble, because many of the demonstrations he organized involved things that were a bit dodgy. And a lot of young nationalists got arrested. And Griffin did nothing to help them. There's Kieran Trent, for instance. A lot of young nationalists were told by Griffin to demonstrate outside a councillor's house. Now, the police do not like that. They do not like, well, they don't like nationalists demonstrating outside anybody's house. they don't mind left-wingers doing it, but they don't like right-wingers doing it. And it was fair enough. He said, look, if this councillor wants a mosque, build it next to his house. But of course, the police arrested them all, and it led to all kinds of trouble. And Griffin didn't give them any help. And these guys just dropped out of nationalism, disgusted with it all. So he can't now turn around and criticise people for getting arrested for doing things that, he was as guilty of doing. I mean, I tend not to criticise individuals in nationalism. Everyone's good at their own thing. Everyone's good at something, and let them get on with it. You know, we may not like each other's personalities, but I don't go around criticizing them. But I'm sorry, when people criticize me, I have to, at least defend myself and say, well, hang on a minute, pot calling kettle black, at the very least. So there we are. I try not to criticize nationalists, but I mean, that 80-odd page article he's written, did he write it? I mean, did Jackson write it? I don't know. Did somebody else write it? I think I don't know. I mean, he's obviously not stupid, and he's put his name to it. Rather like the Mindbenders. There's a very good magazine called Who Are the Mindbenders? All about Jewish control of the mass media in Britain. And this was written by Mark Deven. But Mark Deven had reasons for not having his name all over the press because he had a good job. So Nick Griffin put his name to it. And it could be something like that. The actual website that you can look at the article was set up in 2015, so it's been in the pipeline quite a long time. And who knows, really? I mean, I never like madness, and sometimes you just can't get to the bottom of things. Why people do things is just one of those things. You've got to move on, and in a sense, he's yesterday's man, isn't he? I mean, the only people who like him are people who like people who are famous, it's a bit of that sort of thing. Interesting. What effect it will have, what the reason behind it is, but at the end of the day, we just have to wait and see, really.
Well, I mean, he's also attacks Richard Spencer and tries to link Richard Spencer with homosexuality. Richard Spencer did have Jack Donovan at the NPI conference, and everyone complained about that. Andrew Anglin did, Matthew Heimbach did, we all did. And we all said, well, what the hell's going on? How can you put homosexual on there speaking about masculinity? And he's obviously learned his lesson from that, because on his site, alt-right.com, he had the best three-part series I've ever read on homosexuality. I think it was written by Andrew Joyce. Fantastic series of articles. And this was 2 months ago, something like that. And it was basically Richard Spencer and him putting it in print how they felt about it. And there was nothing you could criticize in that. It was absolutely spot on. And yet he's chosen to ignore that. Now that was something that Richard Spencer could be criticized on a year ago, but you certainly couldn't criticize him on it now. And to criticize him on it now just shows that somebody just wants to attack him anyway, regardless of the actual truth to it. So that's another point. But were there any particular accusations that he made about you that you'd like to put right, that we could put right here?
All of them. Everything he says about me is basically wrong.
Well, he says people don't know where you live. I know people who've been to visit you, and I know it checks out with everything that you've told me. So that's one thing. They talk about the London Forum not being able to afford to pay for these speakers to come over. But I mean, I'm sure you could pay for the speakers to come over if you've got 70 people that have come to a forum and they're all paying 20 quid. What is it? I've seen the forum tickets for 25 quid. If you've got 70 people, sure, that's going to pay for a plane ticket and a hotel for the night, isn't it?
I don't know what he's on about, to be honest with you. You can get budget flights, you book in advance, people stay at people's houses and things, It's bizarre, really. I mean, there is something about giving money to Jack Sen for Matt Heimbach, but Matt Heimbach never got the money. Jack Sen just kept it. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go into money here, but don't give the enemy too much ammunition, really. I know there is one thing, he says, oh, no one knows where he lives. Well, the last time I gave my address to an organization, it ended up on the BNP leaked membership list. And everyone knew my address. So, you know, I'm damned. I'm not going to give my address to any bloody organization. I mean, and, you know, if you do, you're risking it. So, and the London forum's always been, you know, we never made loads of money, but we just made enough to take over. Everything really is, I haven't got the article in front of me. I haven't read the whole article. I've read a bit about Western Spring. And, but I've met Maximus and his family, and I can, you know, they are white. They are white as white as white. Everything in there, rubbish. Everything's in there, rubbish. And it's just, and he knows it's rubbish. You know, he knows he's telling a lie, and he's doing it to big himself up and down everybody else. And it's all about money. It must be. It just doesn't make sense otherwise. But I mean, we're white people, and white people find it very hard when people lie. We can't understand people lying. It really sends us into frenzies of introspection, trying to work out why they lie. You know, the guy lies, he's lying, there it is. I'm in touch with a solicitor, and we'll see about, you know, libel, whatever, so on. But, you know, there we are.
It confuses us. All right, well, we can move on to some of these other subjects. It was Alison Chablow's day in court yesterday. I haven't actually heard from her, but I do know that you know what went on there. So do you want to let the listeners know what the upshot of it was yesterday in court with Alison Chablow?
Well, yes, it was another hearing. I mean, there's been umpteen hearings for this, because it's a new sort of, well, the internet itself is quite new. So she's sung a few songs that don't really fall under the race laws or the religious laws. They're not really race hate, not really religious. They're just singing about a historical event that didn't happen and ridiculing certain people who've been found out to be fraudsters regarding this certain event. So, you know, she is on pretty safe ground there, because everyone admits that the Nuremberg trial wasn't a trial, it was a tribunal, a military tribunal. The defense couldn't give evidence. They were just told what the judgment was, and boom, that was it. And the confessions, which were got through crushing people's testicles and torture, are valueless. But it didn't matter, it was a tribunal. And it was set down at the Nuremberg tribunal that people were turned into furniture, lampshades, soap, and all this nonsense. And it admits all the nonsense. It just admitted it was all rubbish, you know. But it was kept going because of Israel and various other reasons. But a lot of these so-called survivors, they've made it all up, really. And she's focused on those particular individuals who have made it all up and been proved to make it all up by their own Jewish community, and ridiculed for it by fellow Jews. But she's been doing it in a song. So they try to get her under some sort of obscene communications law, which is a bit of an antiquated device. So it's sort of a new thing in law, hence all the hearings. So the hearing today was one more hearing discussing the technicalities of it all. And the outcome today was that the judge provisionally accepts the submission regarding the points of law that the Crown have put forward. So what's happened in the past was a Jewish organization launched a private prosecution against her. Eventually the government got embarrassed, and then the government took it over, which is the Crown Prosecution Service. And now they're working out how to get her, basically, how to shut her up, how to stop her singing. So that's the next thing. Will be the trial on the 10th of January, which again will be a magistrate's court. But you may have a few more hearings before then, and who knows, who really knows, and the trial may be put back, because lawyers are very good at sorting out stuff that there's precedence for, and, you know, reading up the law. But when it's something new, it's a bit of a grey area, and there's a lot of behind the scenes pressure on this. So yes, as far as I know, the next thing will be the trial on the 10th of January, but in all likelihood that will be put back. My own case, I'll be in Southwark Crown Court on Monday morning, 27th of November, 9:30. And that will be another hearing because I've been upgraded, yes, promoted from the Magistrates Court to the Crown Court. So I get a judge with a wig on. I get the real thing, you know. Let's just hope he doesn't put a black cap on when he sentences me.
So
you are taken to a place of execution that can be hung by the neck until you are dead.
James Turner, you should be given a medal.
You
should be given an award. You should be knighted for all your hard work, I think.
I should be a Knight Templar.
A Knight Turner.
This
court case with Alison Chablow, it just seems ludicrous to me, the fact that they're trying her for a song. And I think they knew that it was ludicrous, and that's why they didn't want to take it on. But there was so much pressure from the Jews, from the campaign against anti-Semitism, that they had to take it on. And this group have obviously been pressuring and lobbying the judges so that they're having to go along with it, basically. And I think once it does get to Crown Court and she does get to have her case heard by a jury, that she's going to win. And so that's one thing. The second thing, I think they're doing exactly the same as they do with the bail conditions. When they bail somebody pending investigation and they stretch the bail conditions out for 1, 2, 3 years, and you have these restrictive bail conditions where people can't talk or go to demonstrations or do their normal work, in Alison's case, sing songs and put them on the internet. So it's the same thing. They're trying to drag it out. They don't want it to be over and done with quickly. They want to drag it out because they can keep these restrictions in place all that time. That's the two thoughts I have on that. Are you going to have supporters there, Jez? Do you want to let people know where they can meet up on Monday if they want to support you?
Yeah, come along. I haven't, it's an ugly building. It's like a Temple of Moloch, you know. It really is an ugly, ugly modern building by the, on the South Bank, by the Kudisarp sort of area. I haven't quite worked out where we're going to meet, but the actual timing will be 10 o'clock. They say get into court for 9:30, and then you've got about 6-7 different cases, which will all be heard in theory at 10 o'clock, but it depends what position you've been put on the day, so you could end up last. I mean, I didn't get out till 4:30 last time, you know, so. But yeah, come along, you'll find it interesting, if for nothing else, you know, to see how your wonderful English legal system works. And that's absolute laugh. I mean, most of the cases there are just ridiculous, just drunks swearing at people or throwing your drunken punch at somebody. Just sort of stuff in the past. They would have thrown a guy into a police cell overnight and in the morning thrown him out. No paperwork, no hassle, no expense. Now they drag it all through the courts and the lawyers get lots of money, and it's all, what a waste of time. I mean, ridiculous cases, absolutely ridiculous. The only case that was mildly interesting was the one before me in the main court, where some Islamic radical guy was looking up school playgrounds and how to attack them, you know. It's like pretty alarming, but he was just probably a nutcase. I hadn't even thought about, you know, it was just internet only sort of thing. But a lot of these court cases are rubbish, really. Everything else is just a waste of time, you know.
I heard you had lots of support there when we did the podcast and spoke to you when you came out, and how they had to move it to the other court because you had so much support. How is Jack Renshaw doing? Have you had any news from him as another political prisoner?
Her Majesty's Prison Belmarsh, which is a category A. It's a new prison, quite a new prison. And you've got three prisons down there near, it's actually on the site of the Woolwich Arsenal. You know, the old Arsenal, where Arsenal football ground used to be, and where the Woolwich Arsenal used to be, quite near where Lee Digby was killed. So you've got three prisons. You've got Category A, which is Belmarsh. You've got a Category B, which is Thamesmead. A Category C, which is young offenders under 25s. And that's called ISIS. Long before ISIS came along.
And that's where he should be, really. Well, he shouldn't be in prison at all. But if he was in a prison, he should be in the young offenders, not in Category A. I mean, he hasn't been He's never been convicted of any violent crime.
You know, category A is murderers and psychopaths. You've got a few political prisoners, Anjan Chowdhury there. You've got a few. You've got the Stephen Lawrence, people who are accused of Stephen Lawrence, those two lads. You've got David Copeland, the white ball snail bomber, way back in the 90s. He's still serving a 50-year prison sentence. You've got Thomas Mayer. You've got a few sort of people you could class, I suppose, as right wing. You've got a few Muslim radicals, but the rest are all psychopaths and serial killers. But they are people who are serial killers, but not classed as mentally ill. Mentally ill go to Broadmoor. Doesn't that sound ominous, Broadmoor? So he's in Belmarsh. Now I've got his address here. You can write to him if you wish. At least send him a Christmas card. But bear in mind, this is a high category prison. So if you put your address on the letter, on the envelope, you might not want the attention. I mean, you can go and visit him, but you have to have, first of all, get clearance. You have to be interviewed by special branch. And then you get 6 months to get the pass to come through. So a few people I know are going to go through all that, but the average person would not want to go through all that. But Christmas card, they're always let through. You know, Christmas is a time of good cheer, and even the prison guards let the Christmas cards go through. So you can write him, Jack Renshaw, prisoner number, Alpha 8056, Delta Zulu. So that's A8056, DZ. Wing cell, A4-03, Alpha 4-03, HMP Belmarsh, Thamesmead, London, and the postcode is SE280EB, so Sierra Echo 28, 0 Echo Bravo. Send him a Christmas card. Try and keep it non-political if you can. But let's face it, Christmas is political now, isn't it? Look at the adverts. Look at the adverts. You know, you just see black man, white woman in everything.
Yeah, I mean,
the white man, he's out in the cold as a burglar or something, looking in with Pemberton Bear.
Mark Collett's done a video.
The last bastion of whiteness, didn't it? You know, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, and now it's they're politicizing that as well.
Now it's all mud. Well, I mean, hopefully, I'll get a list off you before Christmas anyway of all the political prisoners so that people can send them Christmas cards. And even if you don't send them a letter during the year, if you can just send them a card so they have a big pile of Christmas cards to show the other prisoners and the screws, then, you know, they're going to get treated a little bit better. I think it's interesting that Thomas Mayer is in there. Perhaps Jack could find out whether the guy actually is a nationalist, because I have my doubts. I really do have my doubts that the guy was a nationalist at all. There's nothing to link him to nationalism. Well, not as far as I know.
As far as I heard, he what triggered him was his mother had died, and the house he looked after his mother, who was elderly and ill. He looked after her as well as doing gardening jobs. When she died, the council said to him, "Look, we're taking your house off of you because this house is too big for you on your own. So we're going to make him homeless." So he flipped, you know. And the MP said, "Well, you know, as all these immigrant families want your house, you know, they need your house." And he wasn't happy about that, you know. All these Muslim immigrants need your house, Thomas, Mr. Mayor. You know, you've got to give way. You've got to let them take over. So he wasn't happy, because if you lived in a house all your life with your parents, you got attached to that place, you know.
But, yeah, totally different to what we're talking about.
Who will look after him anyway, but we'll keep his, there are people inside prison who sympathize with our views, so you're not alone. You know, it's obviously it is dangerous in there, because you've got Muslim gangs and you've got black gangs, but you know, there are a few white prisoners in there. So you're not totally alone, you know?
Hopefully they'll look out for him. Well, normally we'd finish, but I think we'll carry on for a little bit longer, since this is pre-recorded and it's not going out live. We've got one more story that we wanted to go into, which I think is fantastic, Jez, and that's about this swastika, this huge swastika flag that's been draped in a university, draped in the hall of a university as some kind of art project. Do you want to talk about that for a little bit before we finish?
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't hit the movement news, really. In London, you've got London University, but London University divided, rather like Oxford and Cambridge, into many, many colleges. And you've got two art colleges. You've got Slade, which is the Fine Art College. This is where the rock band Slag got the name from. And then you've got the Central College, St. Martin's College of Art, otherwise known as Central St. Martin's. And I remember when I was in the army, an officer saying to me, "Oh, that's very St. Martin's, what you said there." I said, "What do you mean very St. Martin's?" He says, "Well, it's sort of bohemian posh, you know." And it's sort of, St. Martin's College of Art is the place where fashions are made. Things become fashionable there before they become fashionable elsewhere. It's the place where actors, sculptors, artists, interior designers, fashion designers, celebrities, singers, these people, they go there. Not really to do art, but to still get a bit of polish and a bit of networking, and then finishing school for celebrities, really. So the people who've gone there, you've got Simon Cowell, you've got Pierce Brosnan, James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth, Paul Bettany, you've got Sade, Adu, you've got MIA, you've got that chap who did Angel of the North sculpture, what's his name? Angel of the North. You've got Gilbert and George, you've got a lot of, look, James Dyson went there, who reinvented the Hoover.
Top class university, then. Absolutely, you know, one of the real privileged ones that people want to go to.
Yeah, you've got to be pretty switched on or good connections to get there. Stella McCartney went there. And the Sex Pistols played their first ever gig in the canteen there before they were thrown out because they were too noisy. The staff threw them out. It's sort of trend-setting kind of place. So you ask yourself, what's the next trend? What's the next fashion? And lo and behold, an art student did a project. Now, in the past, they did paintings, sketches. Now they do projects, they do installations. And what did this guy do? Well, in the center of St. Martin's College up in King's Cross, a big, like, warehouse building called the Granary, he hung a huge, huge swastika banner over the balcony into the internal sort of atrium. And it's hanging there, and he stood there behind this banner in this sort of, what's that television series called, Man in the High Castle. You know, he looks a bit like Rufus Sewell stood there in some, wearing some sort of black thing. And he said he was going to do this art installation as part of a project. And the teacher said to him, "No, you're not doing it." So what does the student do? Does it anyway. It's what they call bait, isn't it? This guy's a rebel, you know? So he hangs this thing over. And from what I heard, the students were like, "Well, fair game, you know? It's just like Man in the High Castle, you know?"
Cheering him on.
The book isn't really that good. You know, there's a few good bits. Like a lot of Philip K. Dick's books, the films are better. The films, he's got a good film director. You know, they actually make things up that weren't in the book. There's a famous scene where the robot is dying, isn't there, in Blade Runner, which is based on "Do Angels Dream of Electric Sheep?" What a bad title, right? Yeah. But in Blade Runner, it's he's there dying, and he's saying, you know, "I have seen such things. I have seen the Belt of Orion. I have seen attack ships on fire. Now these memories all gone like tears in the rain." Now, you can search that in the book. It's not in the book. It's in the film. Anyway, The Man in the High Castle, this television series has been quite influential. And there is, you know, in the Jewish Chronicle and sort of websites, and this big swastika hanging down there. So that is the next big thing. That is the next fashion. That is a new trend. That is the new punk rock.
Definitely. I think it's definitely the way to rebel now. Is to go against political correctness and to not be degenerate. I mean, it said that in this expose of Britain's far right in that documentary the other week. This was the shocking thing, was that Generation Identitaire said that their members were young, good looking, and they didn't want to get drunk and be degenerate. And this was the shocking thing. This was the cliffhanger before the adverts, that these youngsters don't want to get drunk and degenerate. And that's the way to rebel now. That's the only way left to rebel, is to have a national socialist outlook on life and try to improve yourself. and be the best person that you can possibly be. Be the best example of your race that you can possibly be. That, and that, you know, that's what we want to encourage. And 50 years ago, that is exactly what would have been encouraged in young people today. Maybe not the swastika, but everything that the swastika means to us. It means perfection and improvement and purity and all the things that it means are all good things. So it's fantastic to see that. And I mean, that's got to be the first time that a huge, great, long draped flag with a swastika on it has been draped out of a balcony since before the war, I would have thought. That's what it reminded me of. Those huge drapes with the swastikas on that you see in the middle of Berlin. It was like that, but it has two smaller ones around it. Yeah, it's fantastic. Really, really striking image. Not what I was expecting to hear at a university, and definitely an omen of good things to come, or a portender of good things to come. I forget what the correct word is. It's a good omen anyway, I think. It's a good sign. Anyway, Jez, I think that pretty much rounds up today's episode. Thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully you'll come on again next week. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And tomorrow we've got another one of the pre-recorded podcasts from Prague with myself, Florin Geyer, and Matthew Heinbach. So until then, it just remains for me to say, hail victory!